Hi, everybody. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkiewicz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, on our last show, we reviewed the peak performances from the first four games of the regular season. We're going to continue that review of the first quarter of 2016 here. These first four games, the Packers got off to a 3-1 start. And I guess just our own recollections and remembrances of what happened. And boy, if there's something that I remember from that season opener in Jacksonville, it was standing on the field before the game to shoot our little online Periscope like pregame video and just roasting out there. Man, was it hot.
Yeah, it was. That's the hottest I can ever remember being in a work setting where I didn't have like swim trunks on or something. I mean, I remember looking, and I had a brief conversation with Jayrone Elliott before that game, too, as he was kind of stretching. The Packers, a lot of guys had gotten to the stadium early that day to kind of get a feel for the elements, to figure out what they were going to be dealing with. And I just remember so many people talking about how smoldering it was.
Yeah.
Not just with the temperature, but just what it was like inside the stadium. And obviously the Jaguars, they use that to their advantage. They use their quote-unquote away jerseys, their white jerseys, so the Packers had to wear their home green. And was definitely a big challenge for the Packers trying to come out there and play in that environment. You did the research on this. Was it the third hottest game?
I believe it was the third warmest game. Yeah, the third hottest game in franchise history, because the kickoff temperature was 90.
Yeah.
And there have only been three games in franchise history with a kickoff temperature of 90 or above. And that was something else. And when you think about the game coming right down in the fourth quarter, and you wonder, you know, how much does the Packers defense have left in the tank to try to get that stop at the end of the game? I know the Jaguars ended up not having the season they wanted, and not the type of contending season that a lot of people predicted. But this was a big win to get at the time. The opener in those conditions, that type of challenge, it was a big victory.
Well, one of the things I remember, too, from the locker room afterwards, we went in there. It was this – usually when a game's over with, the guys are going to the showers. You know, they're taking their pads off. They're just going about. They're getting ready to go home. That was the, I think that and maybe the Tampa game from 2014 are the games where I recall going into the locker room and more people just sitting in the locker room with their entire uniform on, or maybe their pads off, but otherwise just sitting. I remember I talked to Lane Taylor and a couple other guys just discussing just how hot it was out there, and really how you have to get your body to come back after that. And you have to remember, too, Mike, we'll be talking about the Vikings game here momentarily, but this is the first time, I think it was 96 years, that the Packers had to go road-to-road to start a season.
Right.
So it was the beginning of a complicated schedule for them, and it was also just a normal everyday, not everyday, but just really difficult challenge for them to go into that stadium and be able to not only compete with the Jaguars, but come out with the victory and stay healthy while doing so.
Yeah, definitely. One of those games that after the game, the players are sitting in their lockers, as you said, just kind of soaking in the air conditioning, getting back into the climate-controlled confines there just for a few minutes. And if there's one play that sticks out to me from this game, aside from the big 4th-and-1 stop in the red zone, which we talked about a lot on our last show, it was that touchdown pass from Aaron Rodgers to Devontae Adams at the end of the first half. The Packers had just given up a touchdown the other way, and the Jaguars looked like they were going to have the lead heading into halftime. And then Jalen Ramsey comes on a slot blitz, and he's all but got Aaron Rodgers wrapped up there. And Rodgers somehow not only gets the pass away, but throws a ball about 40 to 45 yards on a dime. And Devontae Adams at the goal line with a defender draped all over him.
Devon House.
Yeah, that's right. The former Packer, Devon House, makes an incredible catch right at the goal line for the touchdown, and the Packers end up going into halftime with the lead. Really just a remarkable play, and one for the highlight reels for a long time.
It was a defensive pass interference play, so even if Adams doesn't catch that ball, it would have been placed at the one. But when you talk about a young man that was trying to come back after such a trying second NFL season, I think that was a big play for his confidence going forward. We use the word confidence way too much with Devontae Adams. It doesn't apply. He's already a confident young man. But the thing with that is I just feel like that was the one where it's like, okay, we got this out of the way. I mean, last year was such a 2015, it was such a trying thing for him to get in the end zone. He did that right off the bat. And then keep in mind, too, Mike, this was also a big question mark with Jordy Nelson. He hadn't practiced, well, rarely had practiced, hadn't played in any preseason games. People didn't know what to expect from Nelson yet.
That's
so
right.
While he was getting getting sort of back into rhythm, back into his own process. They needed guys like Devontae Adams to step up, and Aaron Rodgers, what more can you say? There was so many classic throws throughout the course of the season. But being able, I mean, just the core strength he demonstrated on that play with Jalen Ramsey draped on his left shoulder to get that thing off was remarkable.
Yeah, that was definitely a play we'll remember for quite some time. But we've got more games from the first quarter of 2016 to talk about. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Wes Hodkowitz there, Mike Spofford right here, and Wes, continuing our review of the first quarter of 2016, games 1-4. Game 2, the Packers head to Minnesota to open U.S. Bank Stadium. As you mentioned in our last segment, first time in 90-plus years, the Packers opened a season with back-to-back road games, and you go from the 90-plus degree heat and humidity of Jacksonville, Florida, to indoors, a loud, noisy place. The fans are there for their first regular season game in the new stadium in Minneapolis. Quite a challenge the Packers had on their hands, and unfortunately they just came up 3 points short.
The first 2 weeks of the NFL season were an assault on the senses for the Packers. When you go to talk about how hot it was and mentally trying to power through that, and then how loud it was in U.S. Bank Stadium. This is one of these things too, Mike, where you look at it, it's so unique because it is obviously the way they built it. Much like the Metrodome, it's going to be a loud environment. But you have to remember, this was also the first time that the Vikings fans, for the most part, were really getting in there for a meaningful football game. There was an energy in there. They're taking on the Green Bay Packers. They were busting all these new things. There were dragons breathing fire. There were people blowing giant horns. They had the skull chant.
Yeah, chant with Fran Tarkenton. They brought back all the old greats.
Yeah, Chris Carter was there. It was... We talk about the Jacksonville game being a Super Bowl. This wasn't the Vikings Super Bowl. They had high expectations. They wouldn't have traded for Sam Bradford otherwise, but this was a huge game for them. So the Packers going into that environment, one of the more challenging venues, I think. I'm sure it's going to be difficult going forward, but that first game at that stadium, I'm guessing they're never going to see anything else quite like it.
Yeah, and it was an interesting ball game the way it unfolded, because the Packers defense, as we talked about with Mike Daniels' performance in the last segment, the Packers' defense really held its own. They knocked Sam Bradford around. They clamped down on Adrian Peterson. Bradford made some tremendous throws under duress, under pressure. A touchdown pass to Kyle Rudolph, a touchdown pass over the tops to Stephon Diggs. If I remember correctly, Diggs had a big game with some really pinpoint throws from Bradford. And in a way, as it turned out, this was probably Sam Bradford's best game of the entire season. It happened to come at Green Bay's expense. They only scored 17 points. But the Packers had a few turnovers. The Packers blew a chance in the red zone. They passed on a field goal, decided to go for it on 4th-and-2 and got stopped. So they got no points out of a very productive drive up until that point. Things didn't quite fall Green Bay's way. And as it turned out, this was probably the peak performance of the Minnesota Vikings and Sam Bradford for 2016.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's something too, Mike, when you talk about them getting off to that 5-game winning streak to start the year, and people talk about Pro Bowls and playoffs and Super Bowl aspirations again. This was kind of the win that powered that, because for the Vikings, there was kind of a hurdle to get over trying to get past the Packers, who for the most part had their way with Minnesota when they were playing at TCF Bank the last few years. I mean, this was a big victory for them. And when you look at Sam Bradford, they lose Teddy Bridgewater earlier in the season with the knee injury. They trade a first-round pick for Bradford. They needed him to play like a really high, capable starting quarterback, and he did that in this contest. They weren't able to stretch it throughout the course of the season, but when those expectations really got inflated, I think it was in the aftermath of this game.
Yeah, so then the Packers come home for Week 3 for the home opener against the Detroit Lions. Green Bay is 1-1. Another big division game. You're going back-to-back division games here with the Vikings and the Lions. And the Packers offense finds itself a huge first half by Aaron Rodgers, by Eddie Lacy. Everything really starts to click. I believe the Packers jumped out to, 31-3 maybe?
Yeah, I believe you're right.
At one point in the game. And the Lions end up putting together a furious rally in the second half, but the Packers hold them off and get a 34-27 victory to improve to 2-1. And what you really liked the most about this game was Aaron Rodgers finding a bit of a groove and complemented by a pretty strong running game.
He was, and then also Jordy Nelson getting that six catches, 101 yards, and two touchdowns.
Two touchdowns, yeah.
Beginning kind of that run towards leading the NFL with 14 touchdown receptions on the season. This was also the game. I believe it was in the first quarter. They had four touchdown passes, or it was early on in the game. They had four touchdown passes. Rodgers goes leaping into T.J. Lang's arms and has that "I'm back" kind of emphatic thing that I think all the microphones picked up. But to get Eddie Lacy going like that, I think, again, it still was going to take some time. It was probably another 5-6 weeks before the offense really was starting to find itself, especially in the face of all the injuries. But you started to see the playmakers come back for them. You started to see Rodgers look more like himself. You started to see Jordy Nelson playing at a high level. And Eddie Lacy, after such a tumultuous third NFL season, really get back to playing how everybody is accustomed to seeing Eddie Lacy play. That big lead in the first half was important because the Lions came charging back, but it ultimately was enough to hold Detroit off.
Yeah, and it's funny when you look back at that now. I think at the time, with the Packers jumping out 31-3, the Lions were kind of trying to find themselves, and they went on to lose another game the following week to drop to 1-3. I don't think anybody thought that Packers-Lions in Week 17 was going to really have the implications that it ended up having, but it just goes to show you how long an NFL season really is, because what unfolded in Week 3 at Lambeau Field really did not necessarily play out the rest of the way everybody thought it would, because there's just so much that can happen in that 4-month span.
Yeah, and the narrative right after that game too is, if the Jim Caldwell era, you know, the Lions have to move on, they have to go a different direction. And then Caldwell, you look at Jim Bob Cooter, their offensive coordinator, they really started to rally the troops after that, got on a big run. Packers were able to come back, as we'll talk about, you know, in the episodes to come. But the Lions, I thought, when you talk about it, responding to adversity, they did exactly that, especially with not having Calvin Johnson in the fold anymore.
Yeah, Matthew Stafford was definitely finding his other receivers, Marvin Jones, with a really big game there at Lambeau Field for the Packers. But with that, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkowitz. And Wes, as we continue our review of the opening quarter of 2016, we're at game number 4. The Packers are 2-1 and end up hosting the New York Giants on a Sunday night game at Lambeau Field. What turned out to be a preview, the first of several previews of what was to be the matchups in the playoffs to come. And in this game, a lot of talk about the New York Giants and their wide receivers, Odell Beckham Jr., Sterling Shepard, Victor Cruz. And the Packers' defense rose to the challenge, held the Giants to just 16 points. Eli Manning in that offense never really found a groove. And the Packers got a nice 7-point victory to improve to 3-1 at the quarter pole.
They did, and this was actually the first game the Packers had after the bye week, after catching that Week 4 bye once again and began a stretch of 16 consecutive weeks of football for the Green Bay Packers. Just a really huge gauntlet of games, but they got it started off the right way. I mean, you talk about this was the game ultimately, you know, where Eddie Lacy ends up getting hurt and then ends up trying to play through it the following week against Dallas, but still was productive. 11 carries for 81 yards, a bulk of those yards coming in the first half. I think, what was it, all but 5?
Yeah.
Got off to a really fast start. Aaron Rodgers did have 2 interceptions, but as we talked about earlier this week, Randall Cobb stepping up the way he did. This was an important game. This was the first time that the Packers with Mike McCarthy were taking on Ben McAdoo, their former quarterbacks coach, who has risen to such prominence now in New York. So McAdoo had a good working knowledge of what the Packers were going to do. In some ways, where it was able to be successful in helping defend against them, but Packers ultimately coming up on top when they needed to.
Yeah, and really getting a big taste of what the defensive backfield was going to have to deal with for much of the season. You didn't have Sam Shields in this game. Right. I don't believe Demaryius Randall played either.
No, groin injury.
He was out with the groin injury at that time. And, you know, Odell Beckham Jr. was probably licking his chops coming into this one, you know, thinking all these young cornerbacks for Green Bay, he was going to have a big game. But Packers were able to stop the run. The Giants hadn't really found a running game yet at this stage of the season. The Packers were able to stop the run essentially with 6 guys in the box up front, which allowed both Morgan Burnett and HaHa Clinton Dix to stay back as safeties and help over the top on those receivers with those young cornerbacks thrown into some tough situations. And it worked out because you could see as the game went along, Eli Manning was getting a little frustrated with the lack of rhythm of the Giants offense. And another young guy, Kyler Fackrell, I believe, had a sack fumble late in the first half, set up some points for the Packers just before halftime. So a lot of contributions from the young guys, especially when you talk about Ladarius Gunter and that young crew at corner.
Yeah, first starting off with Fackrell, very important strip sack for the Packers there. That's what ultimately led into that 44-yard field goal by Mason Crosby, gave Green Bay a 17-6 lead at halftime. Packers only had two more field goals the rest of the way, so those points were important in being able to pick up that victory and really put away the Giants. But yeah, this was the first time we really got a big dose of Ladarius Gunter because he had to match up with Odell Beckham Jr. Beckham Jr. ends up with 5 catches for 56 yards and a touchdown. He did get some help, Gunter did, you know, with HaHa Clinton Dix, and I think they kind of started to build that format for how they were going to defend him again when they saw the Giants in the wild card round. But overall, I think he had to be happy with what happened. I mean, Eli Manning was held to 199 yards passing. And the Packers really were able to dictate the tempo of that game throughout.
Yeah, and as I said, the Packers then hit the quarter pole at 3-1, feeling pretty good about where things were at that point, considering everything the team had been through. And Wes, before we go to a break, though, we'll take care of some sponsor business. At home or here in the stands, we all know that Green Bay fans give it their all, and that takes a lot of energy. So grab a warm bowl of Campbell's Chunky Soup. Its meaty goodness fuels the greatness of Packers fans everywhere. Try the delicious chunky chicken, broccoli, cheese. Just visit your local supermarket retailer and ask for Campbell's Chunky Soup, the hearty way to fuel your game, and the official soup partner of the Green Bay Packers. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford alongside Wes Hodkiewicz, and Wes, will step out of our chronological review of the 2016 season for a moment here and reflect on last week. The Packers had two players play in the Pro Bowl for the NFC for the first time, the Pro Bowl going back to the NFC versus AFC format that it had for so long. Safety HaHa Clinton Dix and left tackle David Bakhtiari make their first Pro Bowl appearances, and it also would have potentially been the first Pro Bowl appearance for T.J. Lang, who got the honor, but then with re-injuring his foot in the playoffs, was unable to attend. But a nice few days in Orlando and a nice performance there from a couple of young Packers players.
Yeah, for HaHa Clinton Dix, it's actually pretty special because he's from Orlando. Starred out at Dr. Phillips out there before going to Alabama. So for him, it was kind of a homecoming of sorts. And I know if you follow social media at all, so many people commenting about how, you know, there's a lot of fan access at this thing. Between, you know, the practices and everything, Clinton Dix, I think, routinely was the last guy out there signing autographs at basically every one of these availabilities. And he's done that already in Green Bay. But you can just tell how special that was for him going back to Orlando. I know you talked to him and wrote a story about it on our website, too, beforehand. I mean, this is something he doesn't want to, he doesn't want it to be a one-time only deal. He's hoping to become a multiple-time Pro Bowler. And I think also the chance to represent Orlando in Orlando added a little extra meaning for that as well.
Definitely, and interesting when you look at it from the perspective of the two positions, safety and left tackle. The last time the Packers had those positions represented in the Pro Bowl, you have to go back to 2010, the Super Bowl year. Nick Collins was a safety for the NFC and Chad Clifton a left tackle for the NFC in the Pro Bowl. So it had been a while since those positions had earned those honors in Green Bay, and good to see. And yeah, as you mentioned with Clinton Dix, when I talked to him during the last locker room availability after the season ended, he talked about, you know, kind of jokingly with a smile on his face. He's like, man, I'm not anywhere near as good as I'm going to get, you know, putting a little pressure on himself in some ways. But he believes there's a lot more out there for him in terms of, you know, the film study and continuing to learn the game and trust his instincts and being able to make those high impact plays in games. And if he can continue that arc of the of his career that he's currently on, that's nothing but good news for the Packers defense.
Yeah, and you talk, Mike, about his how he looks at this thing and the vantage point that he takes at it. I think what's impressed me the most about Clinton Dix is he's been a highly regarded athlete since he was in high school. I mean, he was one of the top recruits in the entire country, regardless of position, when he went to Alabama. I think might have been the top defensive back recruit. But yet he's never been satisfied, and I think that was one of the things that not that he needs any help with this, but I think Darren Perry kind of kept him, you know, trying to keep his head level this year too, saying that, okay, yeah, you had five interceptions. That's great. When are you bringing one of them back for a touchdown?
Right.
What is the next step? And as he told you too after the season, it's all well and good, and there were a lot of good plays he made, but it's also about what he still sees on film that's left there to be had. And, you know, only 23, 24 years old, this is a young guy that's only going to get better.
Yeah, and switching gears to David Bakhtiari, you talk about a guy who's Pro Bowl recognition was overdue in the sense that he was voted second team All-Pro by the Associated Press, meaning essentially he was voted by the Associated Press writers as the second best left tackle in the league. He did not get the Pro Bowl initially, but then was selected as an injury replacement as they moved through some of the alternates. But more than deserved recognition for David Bakhtiari the year that he had. He gets the brand new big contract, being paid as a franchise left tackle at the start of the season. And another guy like HaHa Clinton Dix, never satisfied, certainly didn't take the money and run, as they say. He continued to improve his game, and he really is now a franchise left tackle.
It's not even just that he's a franchise left tackle anymore, Mike. It's just he's a well-rounded football player, whether it's the run, the pass, although a lot of people do regard him as the best pass protector now in the NFL. And when you're on an island like that, you have to respond. A lot of discussion is going to come up in the next couple months about who the Packers resign, which free agents they should look at. Don't forget what Ted Thompson did with David Bakhtiari. They took care of him at the start of the season. One of the best, most savvy moves that they could have made, very similar to what they did with Mike Daniels a year ago. So for Bakhtiari to get taken care of and play the way he did this year, third year out of four in which he played 16 games, really impressive campaign.
Yeah, and I would say that probably not the first Pro Bowls we're going to see HaHa Clinton Dix and David Bakhtiari playing in, as young as they are and where their careers are headed. But with that, we'll call it a wrap on this edition of Packers Unscripted. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com, on Twitter, at Wes Hodd, at Mike Spofford, at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.